The Irish Prison Service have released their new annual report and also their strategic document for the next 3 years. Our particular concern is that we've just come out of a strategic plan, three-year strategic plan from the Prison Service, and there are a number of unmet commitments within that plan, in particular in relation to cell share risk assessment tools. So what that means is when somebody is going to be placed into a cell with another person, that there is an assessment done as to what risks are involved. Then we also see that in relation to overcrowding, a commitment within the previous strategic plan was to reduce and eliminate chronic overcrowding in the women's prison in Limerick and the Docus Centre, which is a women's prison in Dublin, Limerick Men's Prison, and also Mountjoy. The shining light really is that overcrowding has been eliminated within Mountjoy Prison. So we now need to say, well, that's fantastic, but let's move on and let's eliminate overcrowding in the other prisons. That a commitment that was made in the last strategic plan.
Regarding the cell sharing, a prisoner lost his life because of a poor risk assessment.
Yeah, very much so. A tragic death of Gary Douche, 21 years of age, was placed in an overcrowded prison, Mountjoy, and was placed in a cell sharing with others. There was no risk assessment conducted into that cell sharing. What we argue within previous reports that we've produced is that there needs to be a risk assessment take place. There are tools from the UK and in particular New Zealand. Now, we've been told by the Prison Service that they have trialled a cell share risk assessment in the Midlands Prison. We would say, well, great, let's implement it. However, we also, though, have the position that nobody should be sharing cells, unless there's a particular request. And you do have a request sometimes from a family member that wants to share a cell with another. Currently, there's approximately 46% of people in prison share a cell. Most people spend 17 hours a day in their cell. Many spend up to 23 hours a day in their cell. And we would say, well, actually, that isn't conducive to a positive environment. It increases tension within a prison. And also, the reality then also is that many people have to use a toilet, that there's a toilet in the cell, and that they're expected to use the toilet in the presence of others.
I mean, you think of something like that, somebody spending 17 hours in a cell with somebody else, using toilets in front of other people, and you wonder like how that's going to help rehabilitate them in society, or how that's going to help them to change away from their life of crime. Like, it doesn't seem very restorative.
Not at all, and in many cases it affirms negative views that that the person in prison already has towards the establishment. It also, as you said, is humiliating for somebody to have to use a toilet in the presence of others. It's communicating to that person in prison that this is your worth. It's not saying to somebody that actually you've ended up in prison for causing harm, and now is an opportunity to address the causes of your behaviour, and also to pay back or repair the damage and the hurt that you've caused.
It's a very sort of primal instinct in us to want to maybe punish somebody as opposed to want to kind of rehabilitate somebody.
Yeah, very much so. And what's interesting really is that I think it has to be a balance of both. I think a state has a legitimacy for retribution, to inflict punishment, punishment being that you're sending somebody to prison, and that is the retribution. And then it needs to be balanced with reparation and be restorative. So the person's been punished but sent to prison, but how can prison be constructive for that period?
And I mean, you also looked at the issue of women, and several people have argued in the past that you know, there are exceptions, but that by and large women don't tend to be a threat to society in terms of violence or whatever. A lot of them are in there for debt or because they can't manage their bills or they've got behind or something. And, you know, so why have we now got an increase of women in prison when, in fact, a lot of people had been advocating for a decrease, if not no prisons?
Yeah, very much so. You're right. Women in prison are there for, by and large, crimes of poverty because of their social circumstances, at most living in deprivation and often in abusive relationships. And worryingly, over the last 5 years, we've seen a 100% increase in the number of women in prison. The statistics are telling us that it's largely as a result of non-payment of a fine in respect of a court order. So what that basically means is somebody comes to court and the judge determines that they are or have the capacity to pay the fine and the person chooses not to pay the fine. Now, it's a little bit of a chicken and egg situation as to whether somebody has the means or not. But it's also, we would argue, ridiculous that you would send somebody to prison in that circumstance. And what we would argue is that there needs to be more innovative ways to address this issue. There's legislation going through the Oireachtas at the moment, or recently has gone through the Oireachtas at the moment, to allow for attachment orders where a payment can be deducted from somebody's earned salary, or also through their social welfare payment. I think this, in tandem with looking at more reparative or payback options, would be much more constructive. And what I mean by that is, well, the person has clearly caused harm. How can that person repay the damage or repay the harm that they've caused? So you look at community service. Feedback from community service has been that they're more mundane, they're not particularly challenging, and in particular in relation to women, that there's a very narrow number of options in terms of community service orders.
You work with the Jesuit Centre for Faith and Justice, and I mean, Christianity in particular always seemed to have a soft spot for the criminals, if you like. I mean, of all the religions, you know, it seemed to be very close to Christ's heart, the idea of like visiting prisoners or prisoners being looked after. So, you know, how has it happened that in Christian societies we haven't really taken that on board, or we haven't taken that particular message on board?
Fascinating question. But what's interesting that you do see reports from, for example, the bishops in England and Wales, which their title of the report was Prison, a Place of Redemption. The Catholic bishops in Ireland have also produced material on violence and harm. And then our biggest champion of all really is Pope Francis, who has gone to a place of detention for juveniles. He has gone to other prisons and washed the feet of people in prison. So us as Christians, there is that commitment to respond to people on the margins, and you can't get any further on the margins than people in prison. But there is this, I think there is perhaps a disconnect for the majority of people, perhaps, who go to Mass, are good observing Christians, and perhaps don't quite join up the dots as also our commitment to social justice. So there's a commitment to living justly. But then Pedro Arrupe, who is a former general or former head of the Jesuits globally, said something along the lines of that it's not good enough to act justly, that you need to go beyond, that you need to put your head above the parapet. And that's where I believe social justice comes into it. It is saying that actually I have an obligation to respond to the needs of others. And this, I think, is a very strong Christian message. One that I think actually our schools are really good at promoting. But I think when we become adults and we get naturally caught up with our own job, our families, that actually we need to go out there and have the message that Jesus Christ had, and that was to be there for people who are less fortunate and who have largely been harmed by society, and to respond to that need.